Hello, everybody. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Numbers chapter 2. I'm going to do the entire chapter, verses 1 through 34. I will entitle this session, Arrangement of the Camp. Our context is this. In the last chapter of Numbers, Numbers chapter 1, we read the census that was commanded of Moses to take of the Israelites. And we found out that there were 603,550 men ready for war. So we start now in Numbers 2, verses 1 through 2. Now the Lord spoke to Moses and to Aaron, saying, "The sons of Israel shall camp, each by his own standard, with the banners of their fathers' households. They shall camp around the tent of meeting at a distance." Now this chapter can seem somewhat tedious, but there's some interesting stuff in it. And the first thing we're going to look at is how the Israelites camped. And then after that, we're going to look at how the Israelites marched. We will see that this was not a wild and fuzzy mob rolling through the desert, but it was more like a Roman military army, which marched and camped with strict military discipline. Now, in verse 2, it talks about the sons of Israel shall camp. Well, the sons of Israel were already mentioned in chapter 1. It's the same sons of Israel, but they're going to be mentioned in a different order now, a different pattern. We're going to see a pattern of how they marched and how they camped. And the same leaders of the tribes. I didn't read you the leaders of the tribes. They are basically lost to history. I mean, nobody knows who they are, so I didn't read them, but they are repeated from chapter 1 as the NIV Study Bible notes. Now, I've got a table here that shows the camping structure of the Israelites. And I know you can't see the table, but I'm going to try to explain it to you verbally so it will make some sense. In the middle of the camp was the tabernacle. Well, now why was that? Because that's where God lived. He's in the middle of the camp. Now, surrounded by the tabernacle were the various Levite tribes. The tribe of Aaron, the tribe of Merari, the tribe of Kohath, and the tribe of Gershon. We need to remember those tribes. They're going to show up later. Gershon, Merari, Kohath, and Moses, and Aaron. Of course, Moses is with Aaron. Now, if you look at the tabernacle in the middle, surrounded by those Levite tribes, think of, move your eyes to the right, and that's to the east, and that was the march of the line of march, eventually, of the Israelites. Of course, we're looking at the camping order now, but they're going to eventually shake out into the line of march, and so look to the right, look to the east. All right to the right, or to the east of the tabernacle, we see Aaron, that's where the priests are, and Moses is with Aaron. He's in that same family of Levites. And then right to the north and right to the south of the tabernacle are two other families of Levites. To the north are the Merari, and to the south are the Kohathites, or the family of Kohath. And then behind the tabernacle, to the left of the tabernacle, to the west of the tabernacle are the Gershonites. So the tabernacle is surrounded by families of Levi. Now the other 11 tribes are distributed around the families of Levi as we move outward. Now when we get a little bit farther along, I'm going to tell you that the Gershonites and the Merarites and the Kohathites have specific task in moving the tabernacle, but we're not moving it. We're just camped. All right. So around this circle of Levites, to the east, to the right, we have three tribes who were the blood sons of Leah: Judah, Issachar, and Zebulun. Now, we're going to take the 12 tribes of Israel. Well, it's 11 more tribes because the Levites have already been accounted for around the tabernacle. There's 11 more tribes of Israel. But remember, Joseph was divided into Ephraim and Manasseh, so that makes 12. So we're going to have 12 tribes, so we're going to have four triads. Well, that first triad is to the easternmost edge of the camp, Judah, Issachar, and Zebulun. The head of that triad was Judah. He was in charge. Now, as we go counterclockwise around the tabernacle, around the Levites who are around the tabernacle, we go to the northernmost triad, Naphtali, Asher, and Dan. Naphtali was the son of Bilhah, Rachel's concubine. Asher was the son of Zilpah, Leah's concubine, and Dan was the son of Bilhah, Rachel's concubine. So we got three concubine kids in the northernmost triad, and Dan is in charge of that triad. Now, as we're moving counterclockwise, we go behind the Levites who are around the tabernacle at the far east. we have Ephraim, Manasseh, and Benjamin. Now, these are descended by blood descent from Rachel, because remember, Rachel had two blood children, Joseph and Benjamin. And Joseph, of course, his tribe was divided into Ephraim and Manasseh, his two sons. And so Ephraim and Manasseh are from Joseph, who was from Levi, and then Benjamin was from Ephraim and Manasseh was from Rachel, and then Benjamin was from Rachel also. So Ephraim, Manasseh, and Benjamin are to the rear, and the head of that triad was Ephraim. It's interesting that Leah's three children, Judah, Issachar, and Zebulun, are at the forefront, and at the rear is the children of Rachel, the favored daughter, or the favored wife of Jacob. And I think the reason for that is chronology. Age has its rank and privilege. Leah's sons were older than Rachel's. All right, continuing counterclockwise around the Levites who surround the tabernacle, we go to the south, and we've got the last triad, Gad, Simeon, and Reuben. Reuben is the head of this triad, and Reuben and Simeon were sons of Leah, but Leah didn't have six sons. Well, she had Levi. She had six sons, but Levi's already been counted. So we're short one on the southern triad. So Gad, who was a son of Zilpah, Leah's maid, he fills out that bottom triad, Gad, Simeon, and Reuben on the south. So this made a square. In the center of the square was the tabernacle. Not only did that have symbolism, because God is at the center of his people, but it also was a wise arrangement militarily. Let me give you a quote from Adam Clark, who's quoting another scholar of his age named Schwitzer. Quote, "The army was not in danger of being easily broken, for every tribe being numerous, they were supported by several ranks, in such a manner that the first being broken, the second was capable of making resistance. And if the second gave way or shared the same fate as the first, it found itself supported by the third, and so on with the rest. The square form in which the Jewish army was ordinarily placed was the very best for security and defense. The use and importance of a hollow square in military tactics is well known." So here we have an example of natural reasons being set right alongside spiritual reasons why that tabernacle was in the middle. It needed to be protected militarily. It also gave prominence to God. Now, each of these 12 tribes that were around the Levites and around the tabernacle in the middle, the tribes on the extremities, on the edge of the square, they all had their own banner. That's mentioned in verse 2, the banners of their fathers' households. That means the banners of the tribes. Now, each triad had a standard. That's mentioned in verse 2 also. The sons of Israel shall camp each by his own standard. So the standard was flown in the camp by the banner of the tribe who was in charge of that triad. So Dan would have his banner and the triad standard. Judah would have Judah's banner and his triad standard. Reuben would have a tribal banner and also his triad standard. And Ephraim would have a banner and also his tribe's standard. Now, that was the camping order. Now let's look at what the marching order of the Israelites was. Well, the ark was in the middle when it was camped, but it's out in the dead front as they march. Now remember, east is front, west is back. East is to the right as I look at it at my table here, and west is to the left, to the rear of the marching procession. So the Levites went first. Now why is that? Well, that's because God's in the ark and we want to be led by God, do we not, if we're the people of God? All right, now I'm going to, behind the ark, I'm going to point out how the four triads marched, in what order. And mixed in with the triads are the tabernacle and its furnishings. All right, so the ark's out front with, and who carried the ark? It just says Levites. Now the Levite family had Aaronites, the priest, and then it had Kohathites, who were in charge of the furnishings. Then it had the Gershonite and Merarite Levite family. They were in charge of the tabernacle. A family was a subdivision of a tribe. So the Levite tribe had four families that we know about here. So the ark is carried by Levites in general. It doesn't say which family, Kohathites, Gershonites, Merarites. I'm assuming it's not Aaronites because I don't think the priest did the heavy lifting. So the Levites in general are carrying the ark in front. Next comes the triad of Judah, Issachar, and Zebulun. That's Leah's kids. Judah's in charge there. Then behind that triad, the tabernacle was carried by the Gershonites and the Merarites. That was their job. Behind the tabernacle was the next triad, Reuben, Simeon, and Gad. They were the ones on the south of the camp. Reuben in charge of that triad. And then going left, going behind, going west, the next thing we have is the Kohathites carrying the furnishings of the tabernacle. That would be the table of the bread of the presence. That would be the seven-branch candlestick and so forth and all the utensils and such. The Kohathites, that family of Levites carried that. Then going west, going further behind the in the procession, we have the triad of Ephraim, Manasseh, and Benjamin. Ephraim is in charge of that triad. That's, of course, Rachel's blood kids or grandkids, her blood descendants. To the west of Ephraim, Manasseh, and Benjamin is the fourth triad, which is Dan, Asher, and Naphtali. Dan being in charge of that triad. Dan, Asher, and Naphtali being the sons of concubines. Dan and Naphtali of Bilhah and Asher of Zilpah. Now, what are some interesting things about this order of march? I already mentioned the ark goes first because that's where God lives. It's interesting that sons of concubines will go last. That makes sense. But it's also interesting that the sons of Rachel, the favored wife, are next to last. The blood sons, Ephraim, Manasseh, and Benjamin. And again, I think, and also the unloved wife's kids marched to the first. So, you know, Leah was not totally cut out of honor in Israel, even though she's always pictured in the Bible stories as the poor, ugly, bug-eyed wife who her husband didn't love. Now, this arrangement, this marching order, just like the camping order, was wise militarily because the most numerous triad was in the van. That means in the front, as Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown point out. Right behind the ark was Judah, Issachar, and Zebulun, and Judah's camp had 186,400 men, which was the biggest one. Now, of course, Judah is also the leader of Israel, and the Lion of Judah was Jesus that came from that tribe. So that makes sense that Judah was in the front. And that's also, and remember, Judah is a descendant of Leah. So the promised Messiah came from Leah's line. So she is not so dishonored in Israel history, even though that's how everybody thinks about poor old Leah. Now, the second most numerous triad was Dan. He had 157,600 men in his tribe, and he's at the very rear. So you got Judah at the front behind the ark, and you got Dan at the rear. So you got the number one, the strongest military unit up in the van, and you got the second strongest military unit in the rear. So you cover from, you can cover flank attacks from the van and the rear, and you can also cover an attack from the rear or from the front. So again, a good arrangement militarily. Now, Numbers chapter 2, verses 3 through 31 is the listing of the 12 tribes and how many men they've got. Also, each tribe has a leader, and that leader is named and enumerated. And I am not going to read all these names and numbers because your eyes will glaze over. But what I'm going to do is give you some summary facts that we can distill from this mass of census information. First of all, as I just said, Judah has the leading position on the march. And I've already mentioned he has more people, so that makes him militarily strong. But also, he's the leading tribe of Judah now. He's not the firstborn. Reuben and Simeon were the firstborn, but because of their sin and stupidity, they lost their preeminence in Israel. And I'm going to rehash that story briefly for you in just a minute. But recall, before I do that, recall how Reuben was the leader of the patriarchs in Egypt when the patriarchs had a famine in Israel and they had to go to Egypt and their brother Joseph was already in Egypt because they had sold him into slavery in Egypt. Well, who does all the dealing about who has the silver in the sack and are we going to go home and tell our daddy Jacob and all the, you know, the story? You will notice, and I did notice as I went through Genesis, that it was Reuben who was making the decisions for the kids, not Levi and not Simeon, who was number two, and not Levi, number three. They were kaputsky. Not Reuben, who was the firstborn, not Simeon, who was the secondborn, and not Levi, who was the thirdborn. Sons of Leah, they had lost their preeminence. What had they done? Well, Reuben shacked up with his father's concubine, Bilhah, which is pretty disgusting. We read that in Genesis 49, 3 through 7. Reuben, you are my firstborn, Jacob says as he's about to bless them. Pass on his inheritance to them. Reuben, my might and the beginning of my strength. In other words, number one. preeminent in dignity and preeminent in power. Number one, uncontrolled as water, you shall not have preeminence, because you went up to your father's bed, then you defiled it. He went up to my couch. That's when he shacked up with Bilhah, which is pretty disgusting. A concubine was a wife. Your own son shacking up with your wife? God. Now, Simeon and Levi, let me just give you their story real quick. You remember they had just come, the patriarchs had just come to Shechem, and their sister Dinah got raped by a Shechemite, and that Shechemite wanted to marry Dinah. So I imagine this is one of these crimes of passion. It wasn't a random rape. He wanted to marry Dinah, and they said, yeah, okay, but you got to get circumcised first. And while they were circumcised and they were burning in their groin area, Simeon and Levi went around and wiped out the Shechemites, thus making Father Jacob odious in the land, and they had to leave. You recall that story. So in Genesis 49, Jacob says this, Simeon and Levi are brothers. Their swords are implements of violence. That's referring to killing the Shechemites. Let my soul not enter into their council. Let not my glory be united with their assembly, because in their anger they slew men, i.e. the Shechemites. And in their self-will they lamed oxen. That's when they destroyed all the oxen of the Shechemites. Cursed be their anger, for it is fierce, and their wrath, for it is cruel. I will disperse them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel. And of course that happened. Levites didn't get a tribe. They got scattered cities. Simeon's cities were scattered all over through Judah. And Reuben got a little piece of territory right to the east of the northern tip of the Dead Sea, formerly Moab, which is basically a pile of rock and desert. But on the contrary, after sons 1, 2, and 3 had screwed up so badly, son number 4 of Leah, Judah, he was elevated. Again, going back to Jacob's blessing in Genesis 49:8, as he was dying. Judah, your brothers shall praise you. Your hand shall be on the neck of your enemies. Your father's sons shall bow down to you. In other words, you're going to have a great patrimony. And of course, that's where the Messiah, the tribe of the Messiah, came from. Judah was now the leader of Israel, and he marched that way, right behind the ark in the van of the army. Now, something else we can note about this marching order. The sons of Leah camped and marched together, and the sons of Rachel camped and marched together. More likely to have harmony that way, as John Gill says, because as you know, when you have polygamous families, the sons of one wife tend to form a faction against the sons of the other wife or the other wives. But in this case, they're all going to be marching in with their own blood relatives, less chance of dissension. And believe me, when you got 2 million people in a desert under stress, there's going to be dissension. That's why Moses had to have all those judicial cases in the wilderness. Remember when Jethro, his father-in-law, came over to meet him at Mount Sinai and says, man, you're going to wear yourself out, Moses. You need to appoint some people under you. Why? To hear judicial cases. Remember when Moses went up on Mount Sinai and he says, Joshua, you stay down here. You can handle the judicial cases, the disputes that arise among the people. And he was just going up there for a while, 40 days. So it was a constant problem of keeping the Israelites from fighting each other. And this was one way, I'm sure, that God used to lessen the chances of tension. One other thing here, the triad of which Ephraim was the leader, that's Ephraim, Manasseh, and Benjamin. Ephraim was in charge of that triad. He was a grandson of Joseph, not a son, so he was ahead of Benjamin, and he was even in charge of his older brother Manasseh. Remember, Joseph had switched the hands of the blessing when Joseph said, here is Manasseh, he's the oldest of my sons, Jacob, father Jacob, so please bless Manasseh. And Jacob said, nope, switched his hands, and he blessed the younger before the older. Let's read that, Genesis 48:14. But Israel stretched out his right hand and laid it on the head of Ephraim, who was the younger, and his left hand on Manasseh's head, crossing his hands, although Manasseh was the firstborn. And so now Ephraim has the preeminence over Manasseh in that triad. He's the leader. And also his tribe was bigger. As we look in verses 18 and 20 of our chapter here, we see that Ephraim had 40,500 people, but poor old Manasseh only had 32,200. And not only is Manasseh smaller than Ephraim, Manasseh is smaller than all the other 11 tribes, or all the other 10 tribes, not counting Levi. All the other tribes that are listed here, well, it's all the other 11 tribes. Excuse me, there's 12 tribes. Levi's out, but Ephraim and Manasseh are split out from Joseph, so that brings us up to the full complement of 12, and Manasseh is the smallest of those 12. Now, we also see in the triad that Dan was in charge of. This was the one at the very rear of the march, Dan, Asher, and Naphtali. They're all sons of concubines in that rearward triad, but Dan is the oldest of the sons of the concubines, and so he's in charge. So you see, age is prominent here as a distinguishing factor. Now, all of the numbers that are here in chapter 2 match all of the tribal numbers that were in chapter 1. So this is the same census. There's no new census that was taken. Now, I haven't compared the sizes of the triads. Judah's triad was the largest. They were at the front. They had 186,400 in their triad. And Ephraim's triad was the smallest, 108,100. And they were at the back. Well, that makes sense. Now we go to Numbers 2, verses 32 through 34. These are the numbered men of the sons of Israel by their fathers' households. The total of the numbered men of the camps by their armies, 603,550. Now that's a magic number. We need to remember that number. That's the sum of the first census. I talked about it all in chapter 1. Now, that was a lot of people, a lot of men. They were 20 years old and older and able to fight. That's why they were numbered, is so they would know how many soldiers they had. And every one of them died before they got to the promised land, except for Joshua and Caleb. And we need to remember that 603,550 did not include Levites. And it didn't include women and children and the mixed multitude that came out of Egypt. That would be probably Egyptians who had married Hebrews, the mixed multitude. And so the total of people in the camp was probably about 2 million plus. This number, 603,550, is consistent with the numbers in Exodus, Exodus 12:37. Now the sons of Israel journeyed from Ramesses to Succoth. That's Ramesses and Succoth is the edge of northeastern edge of Israel, of Egypt. The number of these sons of Israel was about 600,000 men on foot, aside from children. So that's a round estimate there. Here's an exact number here in Exodus 38:26. Each one who passed over were numbered. This is leaving Egypt, passed over into the desert. Each one from 20 years old and upward for 603,550 men. Exact same number. Now, the census that was taken right when they left Egypt was about 7 months before this one here in Numbers 1. And it seems that not a soul had died. John Gill says that's not very probable, but it doesn't seem improbable to me. Those numbers are rounded off to 100, all but one. And you can have some fluctuations in 7 months, and not all that many people going to die in 7 months. And the number of people that can die can be kept within that 100-man range there, so it would not show up. So that's not a problem. I've already mentioned in the introduction in Chapter 1 that the large numbers cause people a lot of problem because it would be too hard to maintain that many people in the desert. Looking naturally, I think it would. There's some other linguistic attempts to try to solve the problem, and I think the numbers are accurate. It was just miracles. The manna, the quail, the sandals not wearing out, the water springing from the rock. God took care of all those people. And all the numbers, remember, show that God is fulfilling his promise to Abraham when he said, I will make you a great nation. I will bless you. Now look toward the heavens and count the stars if you're able to count them. So shall your descendants be. That's in Genesis 12 and 15. There's other places too. I won't go over those famous promises, but the book of Numbers is showing the fulfillment of God's promise to Abraham. Now, the number 603,550 is slightly larger than the next census they took approximately 38 years later when they finished wandering through the wilderness and they were in the plains of Moab. That second census, I'll call it the chapter 26 census, that totaled up to 601,730, so just under 2,000 people less, which is really not that bad considering they've been in the wilderness for 38 years. They held up pretty good, I think. Verse 18, Numbers 2 says, verse 33, Numbers 2 says that the Levites were not numbered among the sons of Israel, just as the Lord had commanded Moses. Where did God command Moses not to number the Levites? Well, we read in Numbers 1, last chapter, 47 through 50. The Levites, however, were not numbered among them by their father's tribe. For the Lord had spoken to Moses, saying, Only the tribe of Levi you shall not number, nor shall you take their census among the sons of Israel. Why? Well, because they weren't going to fight. They were in charge of the priestly goings-on, the religious side of Israel. The military side of Israel needed to be kept separate. God didn't want the priestly people to be involved in bloodshed and war. Now, the NIV Study Bible has an interesting comment to kind of summarize chapter 2. Quote, a major accomplishment for a people so numerous, so recently enslaved, and more recently a mob in disarray. It may have been the orderliness of this encampment that led Balaam to say, how beautiful are your tents, O Jacob, your dwelling places, O Israel. We'll see that in Numbers 24:5 when the Israelites get to Moab. Balaam looks out there trying to curse them. He wants to curse them. He says, woo, that's a beautiful sight. And that's because they were not a rabble. They were arrayed in military order. Verse 34 says that they set out. They left Mount Sinai. So this is watershed here. Everyone by his family, according to his father's household. In other words, in order, just as I laid out in this chapter, they set out. Now, when did this happen? This was on ER the 20th. Nisan is the first month of the second year. Now, they've already been in the wilderness about a year since that night they left Egypt on first Passover night. And so now they've already had the next Passover at Mount Sinai on Nisan the 14th. That's the first month. And the second month is ER the first. And on ER the first, God told Moses, number the people. And that was finished by ER the 20th in 20 days. And not only was the census finished, but the tabernacle and all of its furnishings was packed up. And off they went into the wilderness, going to the promised land. And unfortunately, they got a long way to go. Didn't have to be, but they sinned. If they had just obeyed God, they would have marched straight on into the promised land. But they didn't do it. So ladies and gentlemen, we are now finished with chapter 2 of Numbers. In our next audio, we'll look at the first 39 verses of Numbers chapter 3, and we'll look at the duties of the Levites. I hope you stay tuned for that audio, and I hope you enjoy this one.